I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee. We are one short of a quorum at this point. There's so many conference committees going on. Three of our members are on K-12 finance, two on environment, and I'm not sure where the others are. But at any rate, what I thought we would do is, which we've done before, is begin with the presentation of the bills, and obviously we can't take any action until we at least have one more member present. So why don't we begin with the constitutional amendment, and why don't you walk us through the bill, and then we'll have discussion. And Representative Metsa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I've got our constitutional amendment, House File 1823, today. Essentially what this bill does is forms a group separate from the Compensation Council to address and set our salaries as legislators here at the Capitol. So that would include the House members and the Senate members.
We now have a quorum present, so why don't we just stop for a moment here, and we'll begin by approving the minutes. Representative Anderson, I don't think you've moved approval of the minutes yet. Have you had a chance to look at them?
I did. I thoroughly reviewed them, and I would move the minutes to be approved.
Okay. Representative Anderson moves approval of the minutes from our previous meeting. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. We started with you because you were sitting at the table. Actually, the agenda was a little different. No order, but being that you started, why don't we... We'll take that part of the agenda first, and then we'll go with the Schumacher disaster bill. actually, we'll before we well, let's follow the agenda in the order that's in. I think we'll do that. House File 1297 by Chair Carlson, and what that bill. If you need a little more information, we can provide it, but it's essentially going to be a vehicle bill. We'll move it to the House floor. It may or may not be used, but it deals with various boards and commissions, and we have people present that can comment about the bill, but it has already passed the House. The bill was in the state government finance bill, and it was an agency bill. So any questions on that particular bill? Everybody understand the purpose of it? Any discussion? So the chair moves then that House File 1297 be... Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I remember right, one other year, and I believe it was your bill, I think it was House File 1812, would this potentially serve like a vehicle like that where it could be the bill of 1812? This would be 1297 if the need came.
Well, I'm glad, Representative McNamara, you remember that House File number. I do as well, but that was not a vehicle bill. That was a bill that went through the process. I did have a vehicle bill at one time many years ago that ended up, interestingly enough, being the not the final version, but a K-12 finance bill, the whole K-12 finance bill. But that's the only time that I've ever had a vehicle bill, and that was way back in the 1990s that was actually utilized. There may have been others at times, but that's just in case something needs to be done. But 1812 wasn't the vehicle. Okay, any other questions? Seeing none, then the chair renews his motion that House File 1297 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. The next bill that we have on the agenda would be, or not the bill, but it would be the budget resolution. And we have to modify the budget resolution to take up the emergency bill. And Mr. Marks, can you explain what we need to do on that? So we're
Mr. Chair, the proposed amendment to the budget resolution would change the total net spending number. If you look at the spreadsheet that's in your folders, you can see in the last column where the changes would be the total. Changing the total net spending number has the effect of changing the category here called claims, pensions, and other bills, and it would allow that to increase from $31,464 to $32,725. The accounting for the other bills is at the bottom of the page, and the change here is not $1.5 million. It's less than that, or $39,000 less than that, and that's because after we changed the resolution the last time, the fiscal note for the marriage bill was corrected to show $39,000 more of revenue. So the two things that are being accounted for here, the last line in that accounting at the bottom of the page is to spend $1.5 million in this disaster bill. And then the line just above that, the marriage bill revenue had said minus $200,000. Now it says minus $239,000, or the effect in here, the revenue from it, has a negative effect on the spending, in fact. So we're netting out those two. The change is $1,261,000. It's spending $1.5 million more, and it's $39,000 more of revenue that's counted on the marriage bill that we weren't aware of when we changed the resolution the last time.
Okay, everybody understand what the situation is. The chair then moves that we amend the budget resolution with the CSRE SO4-A5 amendment. Any discussion? Representative Hackbart.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, this session, when we first started this session, we talked a little bit about the shortfall of the poll tabs and the money that's coming into the general fund to pay debt service on any bonds that might be let in this biennium and when that might come due. And we talked a little bit about that, but I don't remember talking much about it since. And now we're in the last week of session, and I don't know where we're at on that. Is that built into this? Are we taking into consideration any bonds that we would let, and do we need to pay back debt service from the general fund before the end of this biennium, and do we account for that?
If you're asking if the Viking Stadium is accounted for in the budget resolution, Mr. Marks, we haven't done anything specifically with it in the budget resolution, although I'm not sure what the status of things are in the tax committee or the tax bill that was passed, because it did have maybe Mr. Marks, if you want to comment, or Representative Lincheski.
Mr. Chair, we're carrying the memorabilia tax and the seats license sales tax extension and the personal license suites rental in the tax bill.
Is that
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm not sure if that's going to cover what we need to cover in this biennium. I guess that's my question. Are those add-on funding sources going to cover the debt service that we need to pay the debt service?
Well, if I, Representative Hackbart, remember the upfront costs, were the first 50 is paid for by the Vikings, so that is the initial costs. There has been a little that's come in from the electronic pull tabs or gaming, and then there's the House position on the tax bill. I don't know if it wasn't a direction that we were necessarily planning on going tonight, but it's a good question. Representative Lincheski, do you have anything to add?
Not really. Committee, in fact, all the gambling issues are tax items as well, so it doesn't really matter what, you know, I know the governor is talking about some new ideas and there's other things on the table, but they're all tax items, so all the gambling receipts are, the place they land is the tax bill at any rate.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's why I asked the question. Is it accounted for? Do we know what that's going to be? If maybe it doesn't have to apply this biennium. You said that the Vikings are going to be covering the first $50 million or whatever it is. That's why I asked the question. Is it accounted for? Do we have to have some money? Do we have to address it? Are the backup sources of revenue going to be enough?
We just haven't talked about that. So I'm just curious, are we going to leave here this session and not having had that addressed?
Well, the tax bill did go through this committee, Ways and Means, and I don't know if we recall offhand what some of the projections might have been relative to the tax projections by Department of Revenue that were there, if that covers it or not. We can certainly try to get that information as we move forward, unless Representative Lincheski remembers offhand. That wasn't on the agenda for tonight but it's a good question.
I understand. We're talking about the budget and what we need to do to balance it, and I thought I'd bring it up at this time because we haven't addressed it. We haven't talked about it. And I'm just curious. I know the money comes from the general fund. I mean, all the pull tab money goes into the general fund. The debt service is paid from the general fund. I'm just... I want to make sure that the general fund
Had I known the question was coming up tonight, we could have had somebody here, perhaps from Department of Revenue, that could have helped us with some of those projections. But it's right now in the Tax Conference Committee, and that's where it'll be addressed. And hopefully it'll be enough revenue to cover us through the balance of the biennium, if, in fact, the Senate agrees with that. And then the governor, as Representative Lincheski has pointed out, is... commented that he is working on some plan that I don't know what it is.
Some secret plan. I heard that, too.
Yeah.
I wish I knew what it was.
So we'll have to see. Representative Lincheski.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, I, as somebody who's been a stadium opponent, it's a unique situation to be in, but I will say that we have talked about it in taxes, and Representative Dabney serves on taxes, and Representative Paymar and Representative Anderson, and I'm not sure who else here, but we and Representative Carlson, and we have had full hearings on it in taxes and voted on provisions to solve the Vikings issue, and it's being the House version is carried in the House bill. The Senate's got something else, and the governor's got other ideas, and so it is in that sense accounted for, and the solution around that will be carried in the Tax Conference Committee's result in the omnibus bill.
So hopefully that helps, Representative Hackworth. But it was a good question. It's something that's obviously being watched in terms of how that whole issue moves forward. Any other discussion on the budget resolution? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried. The next bill we have, then, Representative Schumacher, and I didn't mean that your bill was a disaster initially. It's the bill dealing with the disaster in southwestern Minnesota as a result of what I'll call the ice storm / snowstorm. And if you could maybe give us a description of what's transpiring, why the bill is needed, and then, of course, there has to be a state share once it's declared a disaster already. I think it is declared a disaster already, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah. So maybe if you can bring us up to date on your bill. And then the chair will move your bill. Let's see, that's House File 1832 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. So.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1832 is a disaster relief bill, as we'll get in the A1 amendment. It's a $1.5 million appropriation for funds that basically cover what took place down in southwest Minnesota after an ice storm between April 9th and 11th. What happened was we had about 24 hours of rain and then another 6 inches of snow on top of that, and then the wind picked up and destroyed thousands of trees, tens of thousands of trees, and tens of thousands of power lines between the cities in about six counties in southwest Minnesota, including Rock, Nobles, Murray, Cottonwood, and Jackson counties. And so I guess that makes five counties, not six. And the governor declared a disaster during that time, during the April 9th and through the 11th, and had sent in National Guard and also opened up shelters for people to stay in for a couple of days and worked out there. The governor did visit the weekend after the storm, along with the federal delegation and the myself and my state senator, and they worked from there. After the amounts were compiled. Because this area, and I mentioned the power lines before, it's a co-op in that area, so that's where the state interest comes into those lines coming down. The private electric companies in the area have done their efforts and are paying for their repairs on those as well, but the total public share for the damage was about $6 million. Total damage in total was about $26 million to the area, but the public damage in that was about $6 million. And the majority of that is the power lines and the cleanup crews for trees that had fallen into the roads and cleaning some of that stuff up. There are two amendments to the bill that I'd ask you to support, and if there are further detailed questions, we do have representatives from the Department of Public Safety and FEMA here for that, and I'd ask for your support.
Why don't we take care of the amendments, and then if there are questions, we can ask the department or FEMA to come forward. The chair will move the first amendment. That's the A1 amendment. That's page 1, line 6. There's a blank there, and we would delete the blank, I guess, is the way the amendment reads, and insert $1,500,000, which would be the state share of the disaster aid.
Right.
Any discussion? Essentially, that's what we were talking about with the budget resolution. Mm-hmm. Seeing no discussion, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. And then we have the next amendment. That's the A2 amendment. Because we are dealing with disaster aid, essentially this appropriation is available for expenditure the day following final enactment. And I think I'll ask Mr. Marks or Mr. Sullivan, one of you, to maybe comment on this amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, this is it's a little unusual in that we're making this a fiscal year 2014 appropriation, but that's because there is no money available in fiscal 13. With the forecast, all of that money went for shift reduction, so we're essentially at zero in 13. And so we're appropriating it in 14 and then making it available immediately. This is the same model that MMB recommended for several other deficiency appropriations that we have this year. And for example, the state government bill used it for a deficiency appropriation for the Secretary of State. So it's a model that's been used in, I think, three other places this session of a fiscal 14 appropriation being available immediately.
Okay, any discussion on that amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Any discussion on the bill as amended? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just want to underscore that I think the state is always a willing partner and understands the unique needs of so many communities across the state in so many infrastructure ways, and this is one of them, where the state partners to take some stress off of local governments that would otherwise fall to property taxes. And so when the state partners with a local community for physical and infrastructure needs, I think that's a good thing and helps the whole state stay healthy.
Okay. Any well taken? Any further discussion?
Yes.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Didn't we do the same thing for northeastern Minnesota? Was it a couple of years ago they had the ice storm and all the damage of trees and power lines and everything? We had an allotment of money for that part of the state, too, didn't we?
Yeah, if you're talking about Duluth.
Okay. Duluth, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it was ice. It was a major rainstorm.
No. This was maybe it was three years ago.
Okay.
There was an ice storm up in northeastern Minnesota, and there was a request for funds. I think Representative Dill had Rukavina, I think, had requests for funds at that time.
Yeah. I don't happen to personally recall that particular event, but we've dealt with disaster relief a variety of times in the past. I remember a tornado in St. Peter. We had that huge storm in Duluth that's still being worked on, you know, with road repair and other projects as a part of that. We've had forest fire situations, so there's been a lot of them through the years, if that answers your question. Right. I just don't happen to recall that particular ice storm, but ice storms can be very damaging. There's no question about that. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then the chair renews motion that House File 1832, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed in the general register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We now revert back to Representative Metza.
I was just making so much progress on my graduation letters.
Do you want me to start back at the beginning, Mr. Chair?
I think that while we've had many people join us since, but now we can properly put the bill before us. So the chair moves that House File 1823 recommended plan pass in place in the general register. Representative Metza, if you would explain the bill or constitutional amendment.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This bill basically essentially forms a separate committee from the Compensation Council that already exists here in Minnesota, which the Compensation Council only makes recommendations. This committee, if passed, would basically prescribe legislators in the House and Senate their salaries. And its makeup is of appointments by the governor and chief justice, eight from each branch, and then for eight from each of the governor and the chief justice, and then two floaters. There is a fiscal note attached, which we had talked about earlier in rules, which I can touch on later at the end. Did that get passed out to the committee?
It was in the packet.
Okay, great. Thank you. And so that's about it in a nutshell here. This is the same bill that, you know, some people who have been here for a while might have seen in 2008 for the most part. We tried to get as close to the language there. It passed off the floor in 2008 with bipartisan support. It's my intention that it would, you know, be in the same type of shape here. And that's about it, so.
Okay, and we should spend a little time. Mr. Marks, you want to walk us through the fiscal note that's in the packets?
Mr. Chair, members, the fiscal note for House File 1823, if you note on the front page, it's showing a $2,000 cost for the Secretary of State. This is the regular or the traditional cost that the Secretary of State shows for a constitutional amendment. If you go to page 3, there's discussion of the of that cost, and then on page 3, the Secretary of State also estimates local government costs for a constitutional amendment in the top part of the page there, estimating those costs at $102,000, and they are their cost of adding a additional ballot and the cost of programming, counting, and then printing and publishing those ballots. So the Secretary of State shows the total cost at $104,000, $2,000 state cost, and $102,000 local. But also note the last sentence in the paragraph in the middle of the page, there is a note there that if counties had to print a second ballot, if all counties had to print a second ballot, the cost of that would be about $835,000. They're not saying that counties need to print a second ballot here, but the point is that the more things that get added to the ballot, at some point it pushes things onto a second page of the ballot, and that's in here for perspective. Then the legislature's in the fiscal note, starting on page 5, the discussion there about the potential costs of this commission. On the bottom of page 5 is an estimated cost for this commission shown at $11,000. That's based on the current commission and the assumption that that's could be what this new constitutional commission costs. And then on page 6 of the fiscal note also shows that if the constitutional amendment passes, the current compensation council is changed. There would be fewer legislators on it, or there'd be no legislators on it, and then there'd be more private members, and the assumptions based on those members would have higher expense costs. So it shows an additional $5,000 cost related to that. And then the final part of the fiscal note was filled out by the Supreme Court, and the court is essentially saying the court would have to appoint members, but there's no cost involved for the court.
Okay, so any discussion on the fiscal note at this point? Let's take that first. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Marks, if you can kind of go over, I'm looking at page 5. So in essence, what we're going to have here is two separate councils, because we will have now the newly created Legislative Compensation Council, but the old Compensation Council will still exist for the other bodies to determine their compensation. So when you're saying at the bottom of page 5 that we're going to have every other year cost with the Legislative Compensation Council of $11,000, but then am I to assume then for the Compensation Council, if I'm looking back on page 6, so the cost, the existing cost of that group right now is $16,000, so we're adding a total of $11,000 overall, or can you help me walk through that piece?
Mr. Chair Marks. And Representative Anderson, the estimated, and I have to say this is the Legislative Coordinating Commission essentially's estimate for the cost of the new council would be at $11,000. That's on page 5. On page 6, they're estimating the cost for the new council at $14,000. The cost for the existing council is what they're showing as absorbed cost of $9,000. So the additional cost for the second council would be $5,000. So the cost, if this constitutional amendment was passed, would be the $11,000 plus the $5,000 and $16,000, as you stated.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Just to be clear, I wanted to get a little better idea of the intent from the author. Is it your intent, Representative Metza, then that the LCC would be staffing this, and that you would assume that the per diem then would be $55 as outlined in the fiscal note? What's your intent? Where do you see, if there's any cap as well, too, on how much compensation can be for lawmakers, or is the compensation, this new compensation council, allowed to increase salaries for legislators as much as they desire?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I think I got a list of questions there. I'll start in reverse order. There is no cap, but I don't believe there is a cap either for the current council in place that makes recommendations, and it's not specific to this council to just increase. This council may also decrease our pay if they see fit, assuming the amendment were to pass. And my intent with the formation of the council would be for us to come back and we could look at some of the details. I'd imagine that there would be several different options, so for the new council to not recreate the wheel, and that there would be some services potentially that they could team up with other folks already up and running to alleviate some of the costs and meeting space. I know in some other committees I've been on where we've discussed councils, Minnesota Management and Budget potentially as a room that the folks could meet in, or various other agencies where they could alleviate, not having to rent an office space to meet, or those types of things. So,
and typically, if I might interject, if a constitutional amendment is passed, then enabling legislation is passed, and it could be the LCC. At one time, we had a contract when we were dealing with legislative staff. When I chaired the Personnel Committee of the Rules Committee with the NCSL to make recommendations, you could have MMB, but all of that would be just off the top of my head. There are a variety of ways that you could address that particular question with enabling legislation if the constitutional amendment passes. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Metza, I didn't notice anywhere in here a definition of what constitutes compensation. Can you tell me what your intent is as far as what is included in compensation? Does that include per diem, and does that also include the reimbursements that we receive here at the legislature? Does that include housing? What all does that entail?
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, this actually would just deal with our salary.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Representative Metz, in our salary, we receive all these benefits. That's all tacked into the pay that we receive. So does that include specifically reimbursements that we receive for telephone, for housing, for mileage, any of those things?
I guess I would, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. I'd defer to someone who interprets law. I think that the way that salary is interpreted just means our actual salary, and that the word compensation, if that were used, that it might spread it out to include the things that you're talking about.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, if Mr. Sullivan can tell us if there's anything in statute that defines what our legislative compensation is.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, not that I'm aware of. I would note that the Constitution would be amended to replace the word compensation with salary, implying a more limited definition that would apply only to salary, but I'm not aware of a statute that describes legislator compensation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Hulsman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to ask the same on the same issue, what the thought was behind changing compensation to salary, and whether perhaps that is something we should rethink, because ultimately people are sort of interested in the whole approach to compensation. So I don't know if you were part of the drafting of this or what the thought behind that change of that word was.
Representative Metz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hulsman, you know, when we looked at this originally, I think that, you know, the word compensation was in. And after talking with many members on both sides of the aisle, with leadership about my interest in having this bill heard this year, I think that the argument for me anyway is that we've got a lot of things like mileage, whereas state employees, I think, you know, federal rate is pretty standard across the board for any state employee to receive. So I tried to pick out the least controversial items, I guess, to discuss that may not have, like with our per diem, there's actually a federal cap that we are well under. I think with our housing and our food, we're about two-thirds of what the federal cap would be for those items. And so I looked at it as salary being something, with the Senate voting on a raise this year, as the item that most of the people in my district were talking with me about, and the item that most of the other representatives that I worked with on this were talking about. And so we decided to narrow it to that scope because of those reasons.
And I think, Mr. Chair, I don't know, I'm not sure what committees this has been through, but I mean, it does seem to me that at least in part, one of the reasons we're doing this is the whole issue of the public's perception of this and our inability to deal with it because of that. And clearly a part of it, I think, that has been in every newspaper article ever written, it does deal with the per diem piece too. And so I sense we do ourselves a favor to just say we ought to have another body talking about that too, rather than limiting it to salary. I don't know, this is maybe not an appropriate place to make a change like that, but it just does seem to me that just given the public discussion of our compensation, it clearly is that broader issue that's always on the minds of people.
Yeah, and this bill will, you know, be continuing through the process. You know, there weren't any amendments offered tonight, but obviously we were looking at the fiscal note as well. But we can, as it goes through the process, probably continue those discussions. Representative Hulsman, did you have? Okay, Representative Dean.
Can I follow up to that point, Mr. Chair?
Representative Metz.
Thank you. I was actually just kind of thinking while you were saying that, Representative Hulsman, and, you know, I do believe that the Compensation Council already gives us a recommendation on those items you're discussing. And rather than be duplicative, I think I might be open to an amendment that would say that we would, you know, this group might take the recommendation of that council, or that we as a body might take that recommendation or something of that nature. So I am open to talking about that more in depth, and if
finding a solution that makes a majority of us happy here.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Metza. And had a chance to look at this briefly this morning in the Rules Committee, and we had a good discussion, although an abbreviated one, about why this bill is before us and why you are asking to waive the rules so that we can move this along faster and complete this in this session, even before having completed a budget with a week to go. We are very somewhat interested in why this is moving along so quickly. Representative Murphy, who, for those of you who are not in the Rules Committee, made a commitment that this would be heard this year before the end of session. So, indeed, this will be on the floor. Can you talk about what your idea, Representative Metza, for moving this on to the floor might be and what dates, so that we might prepare amendments and look through our research and try to get ready for that?
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dean, you know, I couldn't lay out a specific date for you, and I apologize for that on when it would be on the floor. I'd imagine that would be before next Monday, I would hope. And bottom line, I had been on this and following this issue since Senator Eakin had put it in at the beginning of the year, and actually in freshman orientation had a good talk with Representative Garofalo about us needing to look at the issue of pay, and that we were both talking about the constitutional amendment that was created in 2008. And it was sitting by chance on Representative Hansen's desk, who I sit next to, and I asked him if he was going to be submitting that this year, and he said, you know, he hadn't really thought about it, and we had recently voted, or the Senate had recently voted, I should say, on their compensation for the legislature. And I decided that if Representative Hansen was interested in letting me take over the bill and try to find some co-authors, being a freshman full of youth and vigor, that I would try to round up some signatures on both sides of the aisle and get something that we could put into shape. And I bugged Paul and Aaron for quite a while about getting it heard, bugged our caucus about it, and it's up for hearings now. And I think that, you know, as we've been discussing this out in the public and just here at the legislature, it's an issue that obviously is a tough one for everyone, Republican, Democrat, to discuss. So I thought, you know, if I can muscle my way into getting a hearing on it and at least getting it a shot this year, that I'd like to take the opportunity to do so, and now here we are.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Metza, I appreciate your interest in moving this forward, and I appreciate that you want to get it done on time, and sometimes you have to move the rules around in order to get your priorities accomplished by the deadlines, and we understand that. I'm a little bit interested in just how you see this bill moving forward and how mechanically this is to work. Could you talk just a little bit about who is going to be on this compensation council? I see one is appointed by a judge, the other's by a governor, by a congressional district. Can you talk about how that appointment might take place and in what time frame for moving forward?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, it would be 8 appointments total by the governor and 8 by the Chief Justice, and they would be split evenly amongst the two majority parties in control. So if it was like right now, it'd be Democrats and Republicans would have an even vote on this commission. We also built into the language some flexibility just in case our congressional district numbers change. So I know we were potentially going to be on the chopping block and losing a congressional seat this last session, and we're able to squeak out and not be the last one. So this also builds in language that if we do have that change, the Constitution is much harder to change than, you know, us coming into a room and writing a law. So it would compensate for that. And the effects of the
salary prescription, if they were to get together, would take place in the middle of our election terms.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Metza. So how many people total are going to be on this board and voting?
Representative Metza.
I believe it would be 16, yeah.
And thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Metza. So we're paying for a new board of 16 people and paying for them to be set up and funded to tell us what our pay will be. Is that correct?
Yes.
Representative Metza.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you.
And let's see, Representative Woodard and then Beard. So Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Metza, how many other states do it this way? Have a council that determines pay without the legislators' input?
Representative Metza.
I do not know the answer to that question.
Okay. I know in the, Mr. Chair.
Representative Woodard.
In the last election, we had a couple of constitutional amendments on the ballot, and there was a lot of discussion about how the wording was, how we came to the wording for the constitutional question. So why is it you decided that it was just legislators and not the governor and not judicial branch and, you know, and establish an independent citizens-only council? It doesn't say who would appoint that citizens-only council. Why did you decide to not put that wording in there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, yesterday we did have an amendment suggested by Representative O'Driscoll, and really, for me, I think the question on the ballot needs to be very clear and concise as to what the action is going to be, and I thought that adding in who was going to be taking that action was irrelevant from what the action was and would, you know, obviously be part of the larger discussion out in the public as we're moving along. And so, you know, not that it wouldn't be advantageous to have more words there, but I think when people are voting on a constitutional change, that the actual change should be getting talked about, not who's going to be doing whatever afterwards with the change. So I thought that it was more appropriate to describe the change, and then we can work on educating the public with the actual language of the bill, because as you can see with many words here, we could put the whole thing up as a question, but I think it's less effective the more words we put in.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess we'll have that discussion about transparency on the floor. My final question is, when in reading this, it looks like Section 4, which is the membership of the council, we would, if we pass this, Section 4 would come into effect regardless of whether or not the constitutional amendment passed. Is that, am I reading that correctly?
I guess I'll defer to Mr. Shepherd here for that one, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Shepherd?
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Woodard, all of the sections, and the effective date of the bill, it says that Sections 3 to 5 are effective only if the constitutional amendment is adopted. Sections 3 to 5 deal with the existing compensation council and basically are making changes. If a new one is set up to recommend to prescribe legislative salaries, then the sections 3 to 5 strike from the duties of the existing council the duty to deal with legislative compensation.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Metza. I served on the existing compensation council for a couple terms. It's a thankless task. It actually does good work. We, the Legislative Coordinating Commission, Mr. Hubinger's team, put together a great deal of work. The legislature routinely looks at it and maybe makes some recommendations for a few judges, a few department heads. The governor, who usually declines, and then everybody's stuck where they are anyhow. And then the legislators, and we always turn it into a football and trash the whole thing. So nothing ever happens. So I'm intrigued by your idea of having somebody take it out of our hands. But I'm looking here at your bill, and I just have a few questions to help me come up to speed on this. First of all, who's the Senate author, and is this moving concurrently in the Senate?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, the Senate author is Kent Eakin.
Representative Eakin, okay.
And
Currently, it hasn't moved too much. I know in my conversations with Senator Bach, though, once I took over the bill, that he wanted to see if the House was going to take action at all with it first, and I've been working real hard to get there, and here we are, so potentially it could come up. I couldn't answer for either of those gentlemen, though.
Mr. Chair, Representative Metza, you do know that this won't be on the ballot until 2014, so it could pass next year and be just as fresh for the ballot as if we tried to rush it through this year. And that's just a friendly piece of a suggestion for someone who's very interested in what you're trying to do here, but sees some seasoning and simmering that I think needs to happen yet. One of the comments I have is I'm looking at the makeup of the council. I know that the Legislative Coordinating Commission provides the administrative services, but it doesn't describe in here that, at least in quickly reading this bill three times now since you started to talk, how the chair is selected from among the 16 members to run the meeting. Do you have something in mind on how the chair is selected?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Beard, again, I think that these are things where after the amendment would be passed that we would be tasked again with coming back to the drawing board and working on some of that. And I don't know if your experience on the Workers' Compensation Council, if all those things were laid out in advance as to the process, but I'd imagine they would follow the same Roberts rules or Mason's rules, different items that we rely on here to help give them guidance, transparency, and be able to best represent the legislature and the people of Minnesota with their decision.
Mr. Chair and Representative Metz and members, as I served on the Compensation Council, I know there was a chair. It escapes me at the moment how it was selected because I just kind of showed up and the chair was already there because that council continues to exist over time, and I think there's some overlap. And I'm looking in the existing language here. Not all of the language in the existing law is in your bill, of course, and so I'm sure somewhere it must describe how that works. Let's see. There was one other thought I wanted to make. It talks about where we make the recommendations, but can you show me in here where it takes it out of the hands of the legislature, what the legislator's salaries are going to be? That it says it sets them, and then when they take effect, and I assume that the thrust of this is to take it away from legislators' hands so we don't turn it into a political football and kick it around and monkey with it and all that stuff, that it just happens to us because this council says so. Can you show me in here where that says that they make the ruling and it happens?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Beard. Okay, so basically in the beginning here, we've got in line 1.6 in the, do you have a copy of the A3 amendment that we passed yesterday as well, Mr. Chair? They have the first one. Okay. So it's in line 1.10, 1.11, the word prescribed was used,
mm-hmm.
and that would basically give the group that we're forming here, should the amendment pass, the ability to prescribe our salaries versus make recommendations like the Compensation Council currently does.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative
Beard. Okay, thank you. That helps, because then it looks like on line 2.2 it says that you take effect on July 1st of that year, and they just prescribe them, and there's no language that says we can carve them out and kick them around, but the other ones we can work with according to the budget. We have to appropriate the money and so on and so forth. Is that what I'm given to understand?
That is, Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, that is my understanding.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, just one last comment, advice to Representative Metz. Again, I applaud you for doing this. I don't know that it has to happen this year, given all the things we're going to be concentrating on the next few days, which are pretty important things to get done. This does need to be on the ballot, in my opinion, next fall. 2014. And I think we got some time to actually let this simmer a little more, because I agree with the members who have spoken about the line 1.10 salary. This morning, for some reason, I could not sleep. I was up at 4, so I wandered into town to Perkins and sat down and had breakfast with what we call the Shakopee Brain Trust, which is a bunch of farmers who get together and drink free coffee and mooch off the place, of course. But they were offering a lot of advice, and some of it was, you know, we really don't care about your salaries. We think you're underpaid, because a lot of the farmers were in the audience that night. The governor magnanimously offered to raise our salaries, and I said, yes, thought it was a good idea. But what they're really irritated about is just what Representative Hausman pointed out, the per diem stuff. Mm-hmm. So if there's a way we could make this, instead of salary, the entire compensation, so it talks about how we tie into CGIP and how we tie into the 401k plan and how we pay for our parking and all those things, I think that would serve the legislature well and respect with the larger community if they set some parameters on all that stuff. So just my advice, I don't know that you want to do that kind of committee work on the floor, but you may want to do it in this, in a room like this here somewhere. That would be my advice to you. Thank you for bringing it forward.
Thank you.
Here we have Representative Anderson and then Simon. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have another question for you, Representative Metza. Is this new council that's being created, are they allowed to accept gifts?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I believe that the same laws in place for any other council members across the state would be applicable to them. So.
Well, Mr. Chair, and maybe Mr. Sullivan can help us out. The reason why I asked that question is earlier tonight we passed House File 1297, the vehicle bill, and if you look on page 2 of that bill, it puts in statute the acceptance of grants and gifts. The commission may accept gifts and grants for purposes related to the duties of the commission. And I'm just concerned that we could potentially have a compensation council that is receiving gifts in exchange for who knows what. And because it's not outlined in here that they are explicitly prohibited from receiving gifts, I'm wondering if there's anywhere else in statute that Mr. Sullivan that you can point to that would ban them from accepting gifts or at least require them to have some kind of transparency, much like the campaign finance reports that we have to file and the things that we receive and what our investments are and whatnot.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, my colleague, Mr. Shepard, might be able to help the committee with a general statute that would apply to, that does currently apply to committees like the Compensation Committee and would apply to this committee if it were established. The bottom of page 1, the amendment to the Constitution, the final sentence there would say that membership terms, removal, and compensation shall be provided by law. So that's the implementing legislation that members have referenced earlier tonight. That would be an ideal location to specify that sort of a prohibition on accepting gifts. And Mr. Shepard has any more?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Shepard just informed me that it wouldn't be addressed in the actual language here. So we would have to take a look at that later on. But I think you actually bring up a very good point for many of our other councils around the state, regardless of whether they're just working on salaries, that we should make sure that, you know, gifts aren't taken into consideration when they're making their decisions for the people's business.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Anderson,
perhaps Mr. Shepard could help us out on what does the Legislative Coordinating Commission, are they allowed to accept gifts? Is House File 1297 now giving them that new authority, or is that for a different provision in the bill? And also, if it's my understanding in reading that House File 1297, the LCC receives half of their budget from the legislative budget, so they're kind of dependent upon us and giving them money. Is that correct?
Mr. Shepard. Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, two different points. The as you pointed out, House File 1297 does give the Legislative Coordinating Commission as a government body the ability to accept gifts. It doesn't give the individual members of that commission the ability to accept gifts, but that the body could accept gifts for relating to its purposes. Could you remind me the second part of your question on the...
The second part of my question is that the Legislative Coordinating Commission, I believe that they receive half of their expenses are allocated out of the Legislative Expense Fund.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, in House File 1297, it actually strikes language that currently provides that half of the expenses of the LCC are paid by the House and half by the Senate, because that for a long time has not been the way things have worked. Rather, in the state government finance bill every year for a long time, 20 or 30 years, the legislature appropriates money directly to the Legislative Coordinating Commission. It does not come from the House and the Senate, and that's why the Section 3.304, Subdivision 5, is proposed for repeal in House File 1297.
I just would remind folks, 1297, if it moves forward, will not be the language that is in. It's a vehicle. It's already passed the House, but you know, I think I'm going to ask Mr. Hubinger to come forward and talk about that gift section so that that's clear. When we were in government operations, when we presented the bill there, if you recall, there was some discussion and misunderstanding as to what that might potentially mean. So, Mr. Hubinger, if you could comment about what the intent was, because that was a bill that was requested by the commission.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. The commission has been receiving grants over the years from different organizations, but because it doesn't have this explicit authority to accept them, we go through a process with MMB that acts on our behalf and then gives us authorization to actually receive the grant or the gift or the contract. We've received, for example, a grant from the Kennedy School at Harvard to support charter schools. We've received grants from some other organizations. The Mississippi River Parkway Commission has received a grant from the National Park Service for a corridor management plan, as another example.
Okay, just so I just ask that, just so people know what we're referring to, but that is in the state government finance bill currently. So we've got Representative Simon next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Representative Metza, thanks a lot for doing this. I think this is a good constitutional amendment, at least to put to the vote of the people. I say that reluctantly, only in the sense that I think we all wish this kind of thing is something we could resolve internally. I think there are two main reasons that I think it is necessary. The first is just that it's such a difficult political kind of question. Now, that's not unique. We face a lot of those kinds of things. But I sort of think about, on the federal level, the Military Base Closing Commission that Congress years ago established, where it was just impossible to close a military base, even though people knew that it had to be done, particularly after the Cold War, and Congress just decided to take it out of its own hands. And you had hypocrisy on both sides of the aisle with that issue. I found it fascinating. I remember looking into it a few years ago. You had Democrats, liberals, who were skeptics about defense spending, but suddenly when it was a military base in their community, they would go to the ends of the earth to make sure that that military base was staying. And then you had some conservatives as well, I guess it could be argued, who on the basis of fiscal discipline wanted more cuts, but then when it was their base in their district, same kind of thing. And not surprising, you know, that there's that parochial instinct in everyone who's in elected office. And so they set up that base closing commission because it was a difficult, recurring political decision. So that's one reason. But we have a lot of issues like that around here, and if we set up a commission to take it out of our hands every time it was controversial, you know, we would have a lot of commissions. But I think the key issue is that it's a combination of that first thing I described and the perceived conflict of interest. That's what makes it different from just the run-of-the-mill, difficult political issue, like base closings on the federal level, like a lot of issues we do here that are just tough to do politically here. I think that's the added difference. That's the real bonus, is that it's tough and perceived as a conflict of interest, that somehow we're lining our own pockets here. And I think if voters understood that, or when they understand that, I would hope that they'd take a serious look at this. Maybe they won't. Maybe they'll see it as some sort of back doorway to pad pay. But as you said, and I'm intrigued by that, there could be down times or bad times when this commission, I kind of hope they would, in future legislatures, say, well, everyone's taking a hit. We have an economic tsunami, and maybe legislators ought to take a haircut. And that would be appropriate as long as it was deliberated and all the rest. So it's probably, in my judgment at least, wouldn't be an automatic pay increase. But this seems worthy of consideration. I voted for it years ago when Kent Eakin took it on. I understand he's doing it again in the Senate this year. So thanks for doing it. I there's some really good ideas here, and I understand in other committees as well about how to tweak and change it. But I guess for those two reasons, that is not only that it's just a recurring difficult issue, but that it's also a perceived conflict. I think those are the two major issues. So thank you.
Okay, I just wanted to mention to people, apparently the House is going to reconvene at 8:30, and we have one more person on the list. And so after Representative Detmer is done, I'd like to take a vote so we can get over to the House floor and not run too late tonight. So Representative Detmer,
yeah,
if you'll be the last one. And
thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mitzka. Looking on the language 2.4 to 2.8, let's say this bill, or actually 2.10, this bill, the language, I know Representative Wooder kind of touched on it. If this passes, would that language stay that way, or is any agency outside the legislature could change the language, or is it, would it stay? Would you say this is the language that would appear on the ballot?
This would still have a lot of discussion. Excuse me, Mr. Chair, representative members. This would still have a lot of discussion on the Senate side. It would come back for a vote, I'm sure, for concurrence. If they matched the language, my guess is that there would probably be some subtle differences, as with many of the things we pass in the House and Senate, the House side always being a little better, of course. So I think that there would be room for a potential change. Or we already did have one change that I got voted in yesterday's Government Operations Committee hearing. And so I would imagine that we'd have quite a few things that could potentially change next year.
I guess I'll just take it one, Mr. Chair, Representative Metzger. Metzger, let's say we pass it, we agree with the Senate language and the House language, it comes together and we come up with the language. When it leaves the legislature, nobody's going to change the language then. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair, members, correct.
I recognized him twice. I made an error.
Oh, no problem.
Representative Metzger.
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
Okay.
Okay, with that, being that we need to be over for the floor session, if there's no further discussion, then the chair renews his motion that House File 1823 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. Any further discussion?
Go to rules.
Pardon?
Not going to rules, going to the general register.
It was in rules this morning.
It was already.
Yeah. So any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. And I want to thank you, and then I guess at 8:30 we're going to reconvene on the House floor, so we'll see you over on the floor. Meeting adjourned.